This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.
Good day, greetings, hello, and welcome to Art at the End of the World, the podcast where we welcome artists, entertainers, and cultural leaders speaking about what it is to make art here at the end. And my name is Mark Wigmore. Great to be with you. This is a show that I host. I can also be heard weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on classicalfm.ca, where I host The Oasis on the new Classical FM. And thank you to that media outfit and the Zoomer Podcast Network. We've been able to put together this second season of the show, and it has been so much fun and informative, and it's really come together in the last few weeks, and I'm really feeling great about how it's all gone. I hope you've enjoyed it as well. And if you're just joining us, there are many, many episodes to enjoy. Just download or subscribe or stream wherever you enjoy podcasts. A couple of notes for you. Ron Davis, the musician, and Alexander Strelitzky, both up for Junos this month. And you can hear those podcast conversations, those episodes, at classicalfm.ca or iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, everywhere you enjoy podcasts. Carolyn Taylor is the founder and longtime showrunner of Baroness Von Sketch, the TV show, and she will be my guest next Monday on the program. And Baroness is up for 5 Canadian Screen Awards later this month. And of course, Schitt's Creek is up for over a dozen awards, I think. And they've got the most nominations out of any show, and the final season happening right now. And you can listen to all my conversations with all those cast members on the website, artattheendoftheworld.com. You just head to the blog section. We call it Schitt's Creek, The Complete Masterworks. And my interviews with Catherine O'Hara and Eugene Levy, Dan Levy, Annie Murphy. Who else? Noah from the show and Karen Robinson, all there for you to enjoy. I'll let you know that Art at the End of the World is brought to you by Red Eye Media, a leading arts and entertainment communications company working with award-winning clients, including the Musical Stage Company, Summerworks Performance Festival, and many others. RedEyeMedia.ca is the place to visit if you have an arts organization that needs representation and support. And one company that does that is Crow's Theatre. And this podcast is also brought to you by that group, one of the country's most acclaimed arts organizations based in Toronto's vibrant East End community. Crow's Theatre, creating unforgettable theatre that examines and illuminates the pivotal narratives of our times. And that is so true. Crowstheatre.com for info and tickets. The show The Events began yesterday at Crow's. Go and enjoy a show at Carlaw and Dundas in Toronto's East End. Okay, let's get to it. Today on the show, Ben Kowalowitz, lead singer of Billy Talent. There they are, the band from Mississauga that made it real big. Canada, North America, and huge, massive in Europe. Billy Talent, and the name derived from a famous character from the book and movie, Hardcore Logo. Little fun fact for you there. Maybe you knew, maybe you don't. And these guys, Ian, Jordan, Aaron, Jonathan, and Ben, they've been at it for a long time, and they did it the old-fashioned way. Hard work, a sound that isn't quite really anything. It's not quite heavy metal. It's not quite punk. It's not quite progressive. It really cuts through. It's their own sound. And they take great pride, not only in how they record and what they put out into the world, but also how they present on stage and the energy they bring to their audiences. And what's interesting about this group, as you know, rock acts in this day and age, it's sort of a different ball of wax than it used to be. They started in the classic record company, Much Music MTV world of the late 90s. And now, here in 2020, they're deciding how they want to present and release and take on a completely different media and distribution landscape. It really has changed dramatically, and Billy Talent is responding. They're releasing singles at the moment and interesting video projects and really mixing it up compared to the classic put out an album and tour routine. And we're going to talk about that in just a couple of moments. I first caught the band at Edgefest. I'm going to talk to Ben about this in a few minutes here. But I remember seeing them with just 20 people on the grounds up in Barrie. And eventually I was able to see them again. I think I caught them at like a big arena show, and then eventually I saw them at the Hard Rock Cafe, a big show in the States, in Las Vegas. And I remember after the show was done, I was hanging out with my friend Dustin Raymond, who was photographing them that night, and we all went out together, the two of us and the band, and I had a very spirited conversation with Ben that night. We got into it a little bit. We were arguing about something political and or artistic. He was very engaged, passionate guy, and that always really stuck with me. And I ended up taking off with Ian Dessau, the guitar player, and we went up to the top of the Eiffel Tower, the Las Vegas Eiffel Tower, and had dinner and drinks there, and the rest of the guys went and had fun in Las Vegas. But great memory of hanging out with those guys, and Ben has always been such an engaging guy. We've talked a little bit over the years, and he's excited, and he's willing to try new things. We got together last time for an interview at Jazz FM, and he was working on a stage show titled A&R Angels. Maybe you saw it. It was alongside Kevin Drew from Broken Social Scene, and that was a real risk for him artistically, and it was a collaboration with Crow's Theater, one of our sponsors, of course, here at the show. So I've always been in admiration, and of course, the group periodically gets back together and you know, puts their life on hold and goes back into the recording studio and back out on the road. They're doing that right now. So let's get into it. Ben Kowalowitz from Billy Talent on Art at the End of the World. How are we sounding? Yeah, good.
Yo, you got such a good radio voice. Like that, like, low
ding
grumble.
Dong. Still got it. Yeah. After all these years.
I heard briefly your conversation with Mr. Chris Abraham.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was good. I couldn't listen to the whole thing because I was on my way out the door, but...
It was good. He was in sort of an interesting mood that day because, you know, the reviews had just come out for the Shakespeare thing.
Okay.
Done. So he
and was it mixed reviews?
I think he just felt like, I mean, it was a very strong showing.
Yeah, you had seen it, right?
I had seen it.
Yeah, yeah.
And, but I guess the star had kind of warned people that they may be triggered, you know, by different elements. Of
okay.
This. And that was, you know, that it actually led to kind of an interesting conversation about where we are with
as a society,
do we need to be told that we're going to be triggered? Sorry about the hair.
Well, no, but that's actually a good, well, we had that same type of conversation. I think it was mine. We had that same type of conversation when we were discussing A&R Angels, just right. Due to the graphic nature of what we were talking about.
Yeah.
You know, and how like the opening scene, you know, a guy hangs himself
right
on the stage, and right. It's very graphic and very shocking. And we had some people walk out, you know, so it was, you know, we had to sit there and be like, do we preface the show by saying what this is and that you may be triggered and there is shocking, you know,
what did you end up doing?
We didn't do anything.
You didn't nothing in the
nothing.
Program.
No, or? We ended up posting like just things on the, like printed on the door.
Okay.
So just if you're walking in and you happen to notice, you can,
right.
You know, but we didn't post it online. I don't think anyway. But yeah, so it was, you got to be careful nowadays, right?
I guess so. And he said that they did end up making a decision and he, even that, you know, as far as actually posting on the internet and so on. And even that, he said he had issues with, it's Julius Caesar.
Yeah. Well, like
everybody should know.
Yeah, well, and if you don't,
getting into,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's funny. That's true too, I guess. Yeah. Anyway.
What a world, eh? What a world.
What
we
a
live.
World.
What a world we live
what
in
What a
now.
World.
A story that I, maybe I told you this story already, but I love this
So about 20 years ago, I get tickets to like a big concert up in Barrie. Uh-huh. And what were those? I guess it was Edgefest.
Edgefest, yeah.
So that was kind of, you knew about that. Like you
Molson
were,
Park?
Yeah. And you were working with the Edge like you know, before, probably while they were introducing those concerts.
Yeah. I remember the very first time we played Edgefest.
But even like as a guy who was working with the Edge, like they probably had them at that point?
Or yeah. Did they not? That's a good question. I mean, I was working at the Edge. It's all a blur to me, but I think I was there from like 99 to 2001. So I wasn't there very long.
No, not too long.
But I was there long enough to develop some pretty good inroads.
I just wonder if they were having the concerts at that
point. I don't know. I'm sure they were. I don't know to what capacity they were. They must have been. Like, because there was like in the early 90s, mid 90s, they had, you know.
That's right. Yeah.
Like, Our Lady Peace and Garbage and, you know, like, yeah.
That's right. Yeah. You've probably been on the bill with some of those.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Of course. I like it. Yeah. Our Lady Peace. They're nice fellas. Never met Garbage. Met Bob Rock, though.
So they're.
Well, not Bob Rock.
Have met Bob Rock.
I have met Bob Rock, but that's not who I'm talking about. Butch Vig.
So. Rock and Hyde. Yeah. God bless them.
I met Butch Vig in an elevator, and I tried to have a lengthy conversation with him, and it did not go well.
Did not go well.
Because there was not enough floors. floors. And I'm like, hey, man, I really love everything you do. You're really. He's like, thank you.
Have your elevator pitch there, literally. Yeah. So I went to Edgefest, and I was really looking forward to seeing Jerry Cantrell from Alice in Chains fame, because at that point, Alice in Chains had broken up.
Broken up or... Because of Lane Staley.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess Lane was holed up in an apartment or whatever he was doing.
Oh, so it was in that interim. Okay.
It was in that portion of their career. And the other, I was sort of half interested in seeing Cake as well.
Love Cake.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, and the headliner was Nickelback.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So we get there and it's, you know, just a zoo and I'm trying to find parking. And I'm with Dustin Rabin, who is a friend of mine and a friend of yours and a collaborator of yours.
Yeah.
And we get there just in time for Jerry Cantrell. But it's not Jerry Cantrell on stage. Hmm. And it's some other band. And I'm looking at there's a little program, and we're not using phones the way we do now.
Yeah, imagine that. Yeah.
So there's no updates or anything like that. So finally I tap the guy's shoulder in front of me, and I say, hey, you didn't see Jerry Cantrell on stage, or, oh, yeah, no, they switched places. Jerry was on earlier.
Okay.
And he's great. So that really made
me you're upset.
Furious that I had made all this trip.
You missed it, and it was awesome.
So then Cake is on the main stage later, and they last a song and a half before the Nickelback fans pelt them off water bottles.
I remember that. Yeah, right. Cake.
Yeah.
That's like throwing you know, like a bottle at a golden retriever.
I know it is.
Like they're like leave Cake alone.
It's a very good metaphor. Yeah. And so I was very disappointed. The one highlight of my day was at that point Dustin said, "You know what? This isn't working out, but there's this guy I know and we could maybe go check them out. I think this is their first real big festival gig or something. They're called Billy Talent. And I think they're just playing over there. And I think when I walked down and found you guys, you were on a riser that was about 6 inches tall.
Yeah.
Like it was like one of those things they
use. It wasn't a stage.
It
was a scaffolding or whatever, like skids that they had.
They were skids. What it looked like.
Yeah, yeah. No, because they were. Yeah. they looked like that because that's what they were. Well, and the funny part about that is if my memory serves me right, and Aaron is here as my witness, but we had gotten there and it was kind of like a throw-in for us.
Okay.
It was like, yeah, you guys can play, but you're like, you go on first, like when the doors open. We're like, we don't care, but we'll go on first. And so we get there with Eager Beavers, you know, with all our gear and all our stuff ready to go. That stage had been, you know, behind at that point and like being actually set up. Like we got there, there was nothing.
Right.
You know, and the guy who was running it, who I've seen over the years, I can't remember his name, but anyway, he's like, listen, if you guys want to play, you got to set the stage up.
Really?
So we're like, okay. So next thing you know, here we are. And luckily, you know, Ian had some technical skills.
Some construction skills.
Then.
Could work with his hands.
Johnny was good with the muscle and, you know, and we all just kind of made it work. But so we set it all up. And then as soon as we were done, we're like, right, plug in, let's go. And we played. So yeah, that was our very first festival show.
Gig in that sort of format.
Totally.
And I remember watching you guys and it was, you know, a modest group around. And I thought, there's something here. Like this, there's something going on with this band. Mm. And I remember even being able to focus in on it there. And really, it wasn't very long after that before things went completely bonkers.
Yeah, but, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, it really a fascinating memory for me. And it's the one good memory I have of that.
Yeah.
As of everything else.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, thank you for that. That's nice to say.
How's fatherhood treating you?
Fatherhood is the greatest thing that's ever happened to me.
Is that true?
I actually mean that as well. Yeah.
Some people say you have to say that.
Yeah, and you know what? I was the anti-kid guy. Like, I was never like an asshole about it. Oh, sorry. I was never a jerk about it. But my friends would be like, I have a kid and he's so great. I'm like, great.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Right.
Like, I'm happy for you, but I really don't care.
I was actually the guy who people would tell me they were having a kid, and I remember saying to them, I'll never see you again.
Yeah. Well, that, and maybe that was some of it.
That actually did happen.
Oh, I'm going to miss you guys. You know? Yeah. Good luck.
Yeah, right. This was fun.
Yeah. We had a good time.
We had a good go. Oh, boy. The memories.
So I was never really overly... It wasn't necessarily that I didn't want to have a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I just couldn't see it ever on the horizon.
Right.
Just because I kind of live like a horse with blinders.
You know,
and I just kind of focus on what's in front of me and I go.
You also live on stages and in buses and so on and so forth, right?
Yeah, I do.
Or at least did for a long time.
Still about to get back on that horse as well. And then my wife and I, who I've been with for, you know, I mean, God, we've been friends for probably 25 years and we've been together, I guess, for 15, you know? So
a long time.
It is. And we kind of were getting to that point where we looked at each other and we're like, okay, well, I guess, you know, kind of getting to the age where if we're going to do this, we got to at least try to entertain that idea now.
Cramming for the finals.
Yeah, more or less.
Yeah.
And the whole journey and process is insane. And it has so many ups and downs. And it is literally since the moment I laid my eyes on her, my daughter, till now, she's the greatest thing that I've ever done.
Where are we at? Like 12 months?
6 months.
6 months. Okay.
Yeah, 6 months. And, you know, I have a newfound respect for, and I've even told like Aaron and Johnny in the band, Aaron has 2 and Johnny has 3. And, you know, I've apologized and said like, I'm sorry.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because I never knew much like effort. Like there's the love and there's the compassion and there's that's innate.
Right.
But the actual like, you know,
24/7
boots on the ground. And it's been eye opening and I've been very fortunate to be home. So my wife and I have just been kind of doing this together 24 hours a day,
right.
You know? So it's been really amazing. I'm really truthfully,
you'll be very glad that you had that time.
Absolutely.
You'll always look back and think that was the right thing.
Yeah. Even when it's happening, I think that.
You know?
So, yeah, I'm a very, very proud father. Yeah.
It's nice, right? And I always mark it. I mean, there's that first week, which is very special. And then 3 months, they actually start to form and look like this,
mm-hmm.
you know, little
human
version of a human.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
then 6 months, they're really starting to.
Yeah,
have some character coming
she's
along.
Yeah, she's found her voice, which she's adopted from her got from her dad.
Right.
Yeah, so she can scream bloody murder.
Good.
But she's just the wonderment and you know, there's no better feeling than her seeing you for the first time in the morning and that smile, you know, like that's just the best. So anyway,
and
very
and
happy.
And mom's all right?
Mom's an MVP. Just when I thought she couldn't be good at anything else.
Right.
She's fallen into the role with grace. And it's pretty beautiful to watch.
So you're saying you're getting back on the road 2020.
Yep.
I have seen a couple of the dates that you have, some big ones coming
mm-hmm.
up. And I mean... 10 years ago, that looked a certain way through the prism of your life and your brain. You know, fatherhood and where you guys are at and the changes that the band has gone through and everything that rock and roll has gone through for that matter.
Yeah.
I mean, where does it sit with you at this point to
at
be
this
looking
point,
ahead to those big shows?
It's just appreciation.
Yeah.
Like sheer and utter appreciation. And I don't know if it's because of the kid or if it's just because of circumstance or my age being, you know, a 44-year-old man now.
You and I are the same age. We're born the same year.
Yeah. 75.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think also, as I was saying earlier, I kind of live a life where I never really look back. I just keep looking forward. And so the foot is always on the accelerator.
Right.
And now, since having my daughter and... it's given me an opportunity to slow down and to actually turn around.
Life in the slow lane, as they say.
Well, it's not even the slow lane. It's just it's being able to kind of acknowledge, like the see it now from from an angle and in a light that I'm just so, it's just baffling to me, like from that band that you saw setting the stage up to the to where we're at and still being able to do it and still being together and the changes and the fads and the inner workings of our band, and to see it progress and still be standing is pretty remarkable.
It is.
Yeah, it really is.
It's no easy task.
No, it's not. And I think it goes beyond genre, or it goes beyond your like or dislike of, of our band, or, sure. It's been a remarkable journey. And I'm happy that, that being said, that I'm still happy that we're still facing and charging back in. You know what I mean? Like, we're not, the battlefield may have changed, but we're still, we're still putting up a good fight,
Yeah. Is it daunting at all, or is it just like, okay, putting on an old shoe?
I'd be lying to say if it's not daunting, but it's just different. And so what I try to do is I'm trying to use that difference as a motivator.
Right.
When we tour really hard. Like the last record and like record cycle that we went on, I guess, was, 22, 23 months off and on, right? And that's a lot. It's a lot of energy. It's a lot of travel. It's a lot of being away from friends and family and things like that. I'm not ever going to complain about that, because right. to be able to do what we do and be able to put food in my mouth and lights on, by playing rock and roll music, I'll never, ever complain. But it does come with its own set of, of challenges. And those being the obvious ones is the being away. But I love it.
It's going to be the best.
Well, it's just a remarkable, and I think it's important. I know people may kind of roll their eyes at that, but I still believe that a good rock and roll show can give you something that nothing else in the world can give you. That camaraderie of standing in a crowd and, being arm in arm and sweaty and singing songs together at the top of your lungs and sharing in a moment that is only happening at that moment, to fill a room with people that have to take time off work, or they had to, take the train down from Grimsby, and they have to, carpool, and they're paying for parking, and they have to get their babysitters, or they have to get, and they paid their hard earned money to come see you play and to stand and be there and witness this thing together.
Right.
It's really beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's never ever, because we're all working class kids, that's never fallen. We don't take that lightly. That it's a big responsibility, and we're very fortunate to still do that.
Very empathetic with rock fandom there, because I think as somebody who's on the stage staring down at that crowd,
we go see shows. Same thing. Like, I can't wait. Like, Pearl Jam's coming to Toronto in a couple of weeks, and I'm like, I'm freaking out.
I couldn't get tickets.
Yeah, neither can I, but I'm going to try. I'm still working on it. They fell through.
I don't think they do the normal scalping thing anymore.
Like, they're doing this weird thing, which I don't really know or understand too much about it, but it seems, anything to combat scalping, I think, is a good idea.
Right. But I think the last time I went down, it's just the days of the guy kind of calling out with tickets. That seems like a dying.
Well, yeah, I think that's what they're trying to to counter. And Rage just did the same. I was just on my way here driving. I was like, wow, okay, so we got Pearl Jam coming. We got Rage Against the Machine coming. We have the Foo Fighters are coming now. You got the Chili Peppers are supposedly coming out with the new record with John Frusciante back on the guitar. You have Tool releasing. This is a good time. The wave is coming again.
The resurgence.
Yeah, Green Day's out and about. It's cool.
Let's talk about that for a moment, because if we look at something like the Grammy Awards, for example, or just even the pop charts, rock and roll has been relegated to some other part of music.
Yep.
And it's just, Chuck Klosterman, the author, said recently in one of his more recent books, he said rock and roll is officially dead, at least from that perspective. And I'm not meaning to be combative with this at all.
No, 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 no.
But
yeah. It's
But on one level, I suppose there's an argument for that because we are in this moment where I watched the Grammys. There was barely an instrument to be seen on stage.
Yeah.
Then we look at what's happening on tour schedules and what's actually selling out stadiums and what people are actually looking forward to.
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
In their summer stock.
Rock and roll has always been a counterculture.
And there it is.
And there it is. Right? So like the tickets are selling. Full people are throttle. Going. People want it.
Yeah.
And they're getting it.
Yeah.
You know, when I hear people say that, I just picture like old men yelling at the clouds, like, why are you mad? You know, it's like, well, okay, sure. The version of rock and roll that you know has maybe gone. But that doesn't mean that the new version of rock and roll and what that means is still out there. You just have to find it. There's some amazing bands doing some amazing things right now. I'm actually really kind of blown away. For the first time, I'm listening to new music again and being like, wow, this is good. I'm turning it up.
Right. You know?
And
got a couple of picks for me.
Yeah, well, like the Dirty Nil, even from Dundas, Ontario, great rock and roll band.
All right,
Idols from the UK they're fantastic. You know, you got Pup from around here that are doing great things. You know, and I don't know, and you know,
three solid picks.
Well, and three put them on great the list. Bands. You know, they're just great bands doing cool things, and it's exciting, and it's dangerous, and it's you can sing to it, and you can feel it, and you can hear the truth behind it, you know? So rock and roll is not dead. It may be dead in like the Grammy Award version of it, but it's
never
really...
It did used to be there. I think that was the thinking, right?
Sure. And maybe it will again.
Right.
You know, but it's a matter of staying open and staying positive, and it's there. And if you want to go listen to your vinyl in your basement and reminisce about the good old days, you know, then go for it. But it's not, you know, don't complain about it. That's what I guess my argument.
You are in a unique position just for where you guys started that you were at a point where the more traditional thinking of the record business was still sort of in place.
Absolutely.
As you guys got underway. You know, record sales, concert sales, record companies.
Yep.
And then really you watched the World Wide Web and other elements of business change everything about your business model and how it is you make a living, which is bizarre to be at the very arc of that and be on that journey. You were sort of in that sweet spot where it all happened all at once.
I was having a conversation with my dear friend Jimmy Shaw, who plays in a band called Metric.
Great band,
great humans. And, you know, we were kind of having a conversation a while. I was going to say... It's probably, a long time ago because I haven't really gone out that much anymore. But anyway, we were having a conversation about how both of our bands kind of shared the same kind of arc and trajectory from the same kind of the launching pad of time. Like, it was around the early 2000s that, that both of our bands.
And we think of like Moses Snymer, of course, owns the building and runs Zoomer Media here. I mean, Much Music was a place you would play those video awards and be a part of that whole thing.
So we were the
just
last,
a different time.
We were the last charge of that where you had Much Music playing your video 30 to 50 times a day.
I remember.
You had rock radio playing you 30 to 50 times a day. And everyone was drinking from the same well. And what I mean by that is people would watch Much Music.
Yeah.
People would listen to the radio, you know, in the terrestrial kind of format in their cars and at home and things like that. So we all of a sudden went from being, you know, known within a 4-block radius in Toronto, to then being strapped to the front of a rocket ship.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But we had, and the reason for our massive, you know, the way we came out was because of all of those things fueling it. And then that door shut.
Really?
The Much Music stopped playing, you know, slowly stopped playing videos.
Right.
And then slowly stopped playing more of the rock videos. And then, you know, radio stations changed their formats or they how it works. Like
it just
doesn't work anymore. So they need to reconfigure their approach. And so, you know, bands always come up to me and especially younger bands that we talk to and we meet, you know, and they always say like, well, how did you guys make it?
Right.
You know, and it's the most baffling question to me because we spent almost a decade doing everything by ourselves, from booking our shows to, you know, setting up stages to postering, recording, maxing out Aaron's credit cards so we can get rehearsal and, you know.
You got to have one guy you can do that to their credit cards.
It wasn't me, I'll tell you that. but, you know, so, and we would send our music out, you know, hoping to send it to labels that would try to find something, you know, to help us.
Right.
And no one helped us, you know. Yeah. So we went from that type of mentality
you know, being the cancel band at like the Horseshoe and Ted's Wrecking Yard, when other bands would cancel, we get the call to come fill in.
Sure.
You know? To then being, you know, this band on TV.
Right.
Like that wasn't, that we never could have dreamt that in our wildest imaginations that that would happen to us.
At the same time, I guess we can commiserate with those kids because that system no longer exists, right?
Well, and no, but that's
so
what
for
I mean.
Them, it's...
I don't have the answer.
Yeah, what can you say?
Because I know the hard work of feeling by yourselves and just, you know, and just playing because you love to play. And that's still the reason why we play.
Right.
So that needs to be the number one motivator, sure. is do it because you want to do it. Not because you're searching for anything else beyond that.
Right.
We all worked our day jobs, and at the end of the, you know, at the end of work, we'd go and rehearse. You know, other people would go to the bar or go do, sure, well, we'll meet you there, but we'll be there in 5 hours. You know, so yeah, we definitely were very fortunate in a weird way to have that machine expose us to a large amount of people all at once. Because yeah. I don't know if we'd be the, you know, if that didn't happen, who knows how this would look now.
I had a couple of garage bands growing up, and it became quite the party spot. Like, people like to come
sure.
and watch. Did you have that?
Not guys, really. We're nerds.
You kept it kind of to yourself. That might have been a good idea,
yeah,
actually.
It was like, we took it very seriously. We're like, this is what we're doing, and this is how... When, as soon as that door closed at rehearsal, that was just us, and that's, the rest of the world can
I'm pretty
off.
Sure that's, you know, why Billy Talent made it and The Riddle didn't, that you guys...
The Riddle.
The Riddle. Yeah.
It's a good name.
Yeah, thanks.
That's okay.
That's a throwback, and some of the people listening, I'm sure, will maybe remember
go.
The Riddle.
But, yeah.
A couple things that I noted about you guys at the beginning is a slick look right
slick?
Off the top.
Yeah.
I thought so.
Okay.
You know, almost like a uniform of not only the clothing you wore, but sort of an energy too. Tight package, came out. Often it was everybody in black.
Still is.
Pretty sleek and just a very strong presence, right? Like, I think when you guys first came on the scene, there was that sense. The other thing was that, and you've talked about this, it was a little bit hard to put a finger on exactly what subgenre was coming at us here, right? It was, you could say punk, but no, that wouldn't be quite that easy to say. You could say metal, you could say hard rock. There was some progressive rock elements, and... Really, you put together this new package for people that they were able to say, okay, that's what's cutting through, and that's what's...
You know, I remember listening, there was a great Clash documentary called Westway to the World, and there was one part to it, and just to paraphrase...
it's a great doc. I saw
it is, yeah. It was the band kind of talking about how there was four members, and each one was had a very strong personality and carried something.
Right.
And what they realized is when they were trying to change those people to be something else, it wasn't working. And now, then in hindsight, this was kind of looking back, they were reminiscing about how they wish they would have just let that oddity and like the differences was what made them special. That to me, when I heard that, I was like, wow. And not, am I at all trying to compare our band to The Clash? I'm not. But what I'm saying is, the dynamic between the four people, that's what really, it was a light bulb. It was like all of our differences and the things that make us a little, you know, ourselves as individuals collectively, when you put it into like the pot, for some reason, that's what comes out.
Right.
And it's literally the ingredients of each member. And that was very particular and very unique to us. You know, and like the way Ian plays guitar and the way he approaches songwriting is very much his.
Yeah.
You know, and same with Johnny. Like Johnny has, you know, one of the greatest bass players in this country, and he's completely undervalued, sure. I think, as like the respect factor for him. And, you know, this dummy as well. Like, you know what I mean? Like he's an amazing drummer and had his own way of playing that was really particular. You know, the thing that, and me, I mean, God, I mean, singing is a very strange thing. It just, in essence, it's an odd thing to do.
Because it was drumming and guitar playing, and you did a few things right in the beginning, and probably still do. But
no, I mean, I was a drummer. I mean, I can play the drums
I'm okay
right.
at best.
Right.
Guitar playing, no, I'm terrible. I mean, I'm like the guy that can maybe get through three Pearl Jam songs around the campfire if I'm, you know, haven't drank too much wine.
Right.
But
but you had a bit of a rhythm gig in one of the bands. You never did.
I've always just been straight singing.
Straight singing or drums.
Well, drumming. And then I got kicked out. It's a long story, but I got kicked out of the first band because this guy, Aaron, was better than me. And so I got demoted out. I got kicked out. And then the guy called me and asked me if I wanted to sing backup vocals. And then I said, sure, because I just wanted to be in a band.
Right.
And then from that, myself, Aaron, and Johnny left that band and asked Ian, who is by far the best guitar player in our school, if he wanted to jam. And the rest is history.
Yeah. It's pretty great, eh? We had a guy named Chris Cairns who was our high school genius guitar player. And it was always like, how did that kid get so good, better than everybody else?
By like a leap years.
Like, you
know?
What happened?
Like, what? You know, I'm practicing. But anyway, so going back to your original question. So I don't know why we sound the way we sound, but when you mix, and now we have Jordan playing drums with us as well.
And Jordan was from Alexis on Fire.
Correct. Still is. But he, that was a very difficult thing for us because obviously for the, for Aaron, who has been with us since the very beginning of before the beginning of all of this as a friend and as a bandmate for him, for those that don't know, Aaron has had to leave the band due to, his battle with MS and, which he is got diagnosed when he was 24 and ended up playing drums, recording four records, touring the world relentlessly when everyone and every doctor told him that he couldn't. And eventually, it's caught up to him. So we've asked Jordan, who's a friend of ours and in a band called Alexis on Fire, who is also we've toured with and kind of went through the ranks with. And now Jordan's with us. It was a very difficult time for us as a band and as him being one of my best friends in the whole world, you know, even more so to see that. And it's not something that, we're still going through it and whatever that means or how that looks like, we just deal with it. But Aaron's at the studio every day. He's part of every decision where he's still, we just went from 4 to 5. That recipe, as I was talking about, we've just got a new flavor in, and it's been really working out quite well. We made the best of a really terrible situation, and we're trying to just keep navigating how that looks and how that feels and where it's going to go.
You're listening to Art at the End of the World, the podcast. My name is Mark Wigmore. We return with Billy Talent's Ben Kowalowitz in moments. You are with Art at the End of the World on the Zoomer Podcast Network. We return to my conversation with a great guy to chat with, Billy Talent's Ben Kowalowitz. Why did Europe respond the way it did?
It's a good question.
Huge, right?
We do okay,
Like, arguably your best...
By far.
...market.
In the world, for sure.
Is there just a bigger appetite for rock and roll there?
No, because then that would apply to all bands, right? Or all rock bands. No, I don't know. I think for us, it was just a matter of, like when we first came out and talking about that rocket ship, was also happening in like places like the UK for us. And then Germany, which Germany, has 88 million people in the size of Ontario, and their music channel, like the Much Music or MTV, I guess it was there, also was pumping out all over from like Austria, Switzerland,
all over
Poland,
Western Europe,
Hungary, all over Western Europe. So we all of a sudden were being catapulted into this, into people's homes. And then we just literally, if you want the honest truth, it was hard work. We went and played in front of, 100 people in a small bar on a, on a Tuesday night. And then we'd keep going back and we kept going back. And every time we go back, the crowds got incrementally a little bit bigger.
You guys played Poland a little bit?
Yeah, lots of times. Yeah.
That's the homeland. And you go...
For me, yeah.
Go, and is that meaningful for
Absolutely.
You to go see where things started?
Totally.
Yeah.
You know, and not to get even weird too much into my history, but you know, my grandfather fought for the Polish army, was captured day two, was in a camp, met my grandmother in the camp, escaped there. My dad, after the war, was born in a DP camp, which is a displaced persons camp, and then came to Canada. And then, you know, met my mom, and so on and so forth. And then I was born.
Did that stuff hang over you as a kid? Was there awareness
not
growing
really
up?
When that, you're, that, no. That more is I became more of a, you know, into my teens and was a little bit more cognitive of what, you know, the war. And
but were your parents, you know, were your, was your dad different than other dads in that, you know, he had had gone through those experiences? And
I think it was just more appreciative
right.
of the small things, you right. know, and hardest working guy I know, which I guess I've adopted some of that drive. Of
I would say, yeah.
From him, which I'm, you know, forever indebted and thankful for. But so, yeah, I mean, going back to Poland, my dad hadn't been back since he was born. And he was born in Poznań. So at that time, it was kind of, it would go between occupied and allied throughout the war. No, you know what? I stand corrected. He did go there once years and years and years ago, but it was the first time he ever been to Warsaw, and we went to Krakow and Poznań as well. So anyway, my dad came with me and
the
we
big
walked,
markets.
Yeah, we yeah. walked around and, you know, and Aaron was there, and Aaron's also has Polish in his bloodline as well. And so we ended up walking around and going out and having pierogies, and my dad walked through Old Town Warsaw and, you know, and then we played in Berlin. I took him down to the wall and took him to the Holocaust Museum and Memorial there. And, you know,
it's
it really touched
thing,
my dad.
It?
Yeah. So it was, I'm really happy and to have shared that with my dad, knowing about what my, you know, his journey and what he went through and us being, you know, doing very well in Germany and having such a beautiful relationship with that country and the people and have so many friends there. And for him to see his son, you know, with his friends on stage in, you know, Berlin in front of 10,000 people, you know, or whatever it is, he's, you know, it was a very special moment. He still talks about it to this day. And it was
pretty incredible.
Know,
I mean,
yeah, that's pretty cool.
That is, you know, you hope your parents at least get to see one
yeah.
of those.
Yeah.
Things
you know, and those
that
are the types
of
things
that
people,
of success.
People
yeah.
don't know, right? Like, right. Why would they?
Yeah.
You know, but those are the types of things that it still, like, it fills my heart to be able to look over and see him there. And so Europe has been a place to us. And it's weird kind of saying Europe because it's so big.
Sure.
And so,
diverse
from,
so
you know,
on, yeah.
10 hour drive, you can be in three different countries kind of thing, you yeah. know, but, we've done quite well in certain places and you know what, we just keep going back and we keep, it keeps growing. So
is it in the plans for 2020?
Yeah. So we're going back out there this, in May, we head back out and we actually start in the UK and then we go to Russia, Moscow, St. Pete's, and we go to Kiev. Then, well, obviously, Germany, we're playing pretty big festivals there, which we're very excited about. And then Switzerland, Austria, Poland again, and we end in Hungary, I think.
So. You must have to learn at some point, and maybe this is just trial by fire, of
currency.
You know, a lot of currency
What's
issues.
Currency? Yeah,
but
yeah,
at the same
yeah.
time, you know, you guys, as you say, you were strapped to a rocket ship, and you were suddenly playing bigger venues and bigger venues, but nothing, I don't think, can really prepare you for 100,000
no.
people. I mean, that's just, when you guys get in front of a crowd like that, to just learn how to even sway with
yeah,
that energy.
Like. Yeah, it's overwhelming.
It's bizarre.
Yeah, it's a lot coming at you, and you got to give that much more back.
Is that's the methodology?
I mean, again, we just kind of approach it as, you know, we're so lucky to be there. You know, so we get really excited to have that chance and to be able to, you know, take that car out for a ride kind of thing. You
right.
know, it's like sitting there like, all right, here we go. You know, and I always, you know, we've been fortunate enough, like the last time we played this one festival, Rockham Ring and Rockham Park, there's 110,000 people there. And the festival the day before had been closed or had to be shut down. And all the people were moved because of the weather and
wow.
storms, and people were getting struck by lightning, which is awful.
Right.
You know, when you're standing, you know, vulnerably in the open field.
Yeah.
The next day, we were supposed to go on. It was the Deftones, us, and then the Red Hot Chili Peppers headlining. And for us, you know, we're huge Chili Peppers fans, like, you know, Mother's Milk and Blood Sugar Sex Magik were seminal records to us. You know?
They're really the sweet spot, aren't they? They're the fulcrum on which that whole
yeah.
arc of that career happens.
You Absolutely.
Know, they're right in the middle.
And like Blood Sugar Sex Magik came out on the same day as Nirvana. Never mind about that. Anyway, so here we are backstage, and the whole time throughout the day, the weather's absolutely horrible. And the promoter comes into us, is like, "You're playing. We're like, okay, great. Okay, you're not playing. Okay, right. Great. You're not playing. Okay, great. You know, literally it was like this back and forth with the whole day. And now it's like 10:30 at night, you know, and it's still raining and it's still miserable. And the promoter said,
like a Woodstock story.
This is, yeah. And the promoter comes in and says, listen, we're going to put the Deftones on. Then you guys, then the Chili Peppers, we're going to open the doors. These people have been standing outside in the cold, not even allowed on the grounds to use like for food and, you know, washrooms, you know. So we're like, all right. So, but it's going to be condensed sets because of whatever. Like, sure, no problem. And then the promoter comes in again. And the poor guy, he was having a bit of a rough day, but he was very, very, he was trying his best. Right. And the promoter came in and said, you know, okay, the Chili Peppers have to leave due to some obligation or whatever. And we're like, okay, so they want to know if you'll go on after them. We're like...
So let me get this straight.
Yeah.
Give it away now.
Yeah. Right. So we ended up, we're like, okay. And so, yeah, so it was the Deftones, the Chili Peppers, and then we went on. And the crowd were just so thankful and so happy to have music in front of them. And for just to what they've endured over the last, you know, what. And then we played it. It was arguably one of the most magical shows that I've ever put on or been part of, just because of how happy people were. And just the oddity of going on
and
after.
And they were warmed up.
Yeah. You know, and it was Jordan's second show in the band. Yeah. So second or third show. So anyway, yeah. So that was those types of moments when you put your head on the pillow, go, wow, what just happened? Like, how are we even here? How do people even know who we are?
Right.
You know? Yeah. When you're standing side stage listening to, you know, Give It Away or, you know. Yeah. It was pretty cool. Pretty cool.
I was looking at the record released since 2003, since the first record, and it's been on this sort of 3-year cycle, and it looks like you guys have finally broken.
Yeah.
And I know that comes with so many different reasons as to, you know, you guys are changing and the record business has changed too, so there's decisions that are out of your hands as well, but where does that
stand?
Well,
it's a good question, and it's going to be a bit of a lengthy one, but thank God it's a podcast.
We got all the time in the world.
So there I was. You know, when we're talking about the history of the band and the way we have operated, it takes us a while. Ian is the main songwriter in the band. Not only is he great as Chris Kearney was.
Chris Cairns.
Cairns
on
guitar.
Good for you.
But this guy is, you know, arguably the best guitar player in not only in this country, but potentially the world, in my opinion. He is one of the greatest songwriters in this country, if not the world, in my opinion. But he is also an amazing producer as well. And he produces all of, well, the last three records, or the one that we're working on, the last two, and then co-produced the Billy Talent 2. But his songwriting and the way he approaches songs is it takes a while, and he's methodical about it, and he really combs through everything. So for us, we're not the band that's like, yeah, we wrote 75 songs, we're going to pick the best 10. It's like, no, we work on 10 to 12 songs, and we make them the best that they can possibly be.
And he thinks on a level of, and you sort of pointed this out with the last record too, is it's almost like he wants, I know that was very much his baby, and it was almost thematic. Like he had this idea for this project and for this sound and the content and everything.
That's the vision. Yeah. It's, you know.
Is that going to continue? You'll kind of go along that way?
Yeah. So to that point, so we would, that's the way we would write. And then recording is just as methodical and just as fine tuned. And then we tour. So yeah, it is a 3-year cycle, but within that, like we don't stop working. It's just a constant. It's just a different, you know, you go from like jamming, working on the songs to then recording the songs to then finishing all that kind of, you know, and then going out and playing, you know. So we decided on this record that we were going to do everything completely different than what we've done before.
It's a good idea. Mix
it
up.
It's yes, but it's also, you know, you can't be, again, the old guy yelling at the clouds, right? Like, well, we're record sales. You know, it's like, we don't give a shit about that because we've never made a dollar off any record sales. So that's never been part of our equation.
Not off, even off the first couple?
Never.
Nothing.
Nothing.
Right. The touring
which we
life.
Can talk about that right. another time. But, you know, so we decided that nowadays you can use the different mediums to your advantage.
Right.
You know, yes, you can kick and scream and be like, well, people don't buy records and people don't listen. Yeah, you're right. But that's not going to change the fact of how this, you know, in order to stay fluid. And in order for people to hear about you, you need to, you know, you need to figure out ways of how they consume and give it to them. Right? That gone are the days, well, not really, but like where I would get, you know, a record and I would go and I would study the artwork and open it up and listen to it 700 times, you know, flipping it back and forth on vinyl. And
it's an experience I miss very much.
Yeah, well, like, and, you know, having some wine and like I quit smoking, but like, you know, smoking a pack of cigarettes and just like listening to music, you know, it's the best. Anyway, so we decided on this record that we're going to do something different. So that being said, what did we do? Well, we decided that we're going to create a batch of songs and then just release them as they're done.
This is interesting because Tame Impala has just put out a new record, highly anticipated. At the same time, he'd released most of it beforehand, and he had just done it track by track as they sort of came along. He added a few little remixes and things to the final record, but at the end of the day, I had heard most of the record by the time it came out, and that was kind of cool.
Yeah, and you enjoyed it.
It fed me in a different way.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Well said. So that's kind of how we're approaching it. So we went in and recorded 7 songs. The first ones that we recorded were probably the craziest songs that we've ever written. Okay. It's a song called Forgiveness 1 and 2.
Define crazy.
Well, just like the music, like it's the closest thing to Billy Talent doing, like going prog.
Okay.
So it's very complex. The the musicianship in the band is just next level. Like the playing itself and Ian's songwriting again is next level. So it was this crazy journey for the first half. And then the second part of the song, which we wanted to do 2 parts to it. So it's like a 6.5-minute song, is this Floyd beautiful. We got the Northern Horns to come in and play with us and there's beautiful horns and we have a saxophone solo. So classical 96.3 will actually play us now.
Of course we will. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That seals the deal.
But for real though, we have a beautiful saxophone solo in the song and it's,
I like hearing this. I like hearing
the song.
I like hearing what you guys are doing because I think that's a nice to think about you guys going, okay, you know what? There's more we can explore.
Well, yeah. And that's the thing. And so there was no teasing. There was no nothing. We just, one morning, we just dropped the song a couple months ago. And the reaction to the song has been like overwhelmingly positive and people are so excited. But people, like, you know, are asking, like, well, what are they doing? Like, is this a new record? So we just haven't said anything. So then we just released our first kind of single, quote unquote, and that's doing really well. And within this new package that we're going to be doing, we're going to probably release maybe 2 or 3 more songs. And then, like, as the song's on the radio, we're writing lyrics to the other couple songs, and Ian's finishing guitars, and I'm tracking them.
Right.
While the mixes are coming in from the one that we just sent out. So it's all...
How's that feeling?
It's feeling great.
To do it a little differently.
I mean, Ian might tell you differently because he's been at the studio, you know, nonstop and hasn't really had a break. But I mean, it's been really invigorating to hear, to have things out and still be working on at the same time.
And I should point out that Aaron is here.
He is.
Your original drummer. And we heard him in the background a moment ago, but he's actually filming this.
Yeah.
And this is going to, I imagine, going to be some part of this tapestry of releases that you're putting together.
So, funny you should ask, Mark.
Well, you know, the camera's right there, so.
So we're going to be releasing a record, and the record comes out in the fall. When? Okay. Don't know. What's the title? No idea. But all I know is, like, so we're releasing these 5 songs, which I'll get to, and we have a couple more that we need to finish. And then we're going back in the studio next month to record 4 more. And then we go on tour, and then we're going to come, hopefully have the music done, and then I'll track the rest of those songs over the summer. And then once those are done, we'll put it out as a record. Sure. Right. But we're going to more or less be releasing half the record first before the other half comes out. So with that being said, it's been a remarkable challenge and bit daunting getting the record labels to understand the vision of something like this, because again, that old, you know, Titanic boat is slow to turn.
It feels like it shouldn't be though. Like now they must be seeing, like, hey, you know, the methods.
Archaic system is
clearly broken. It's got long, that ship has sailed. Yeah.
They've been really great. And I should say, I think that's worth noting because they've been really great with the idea and have been really helping with the follow through and the execution of it. But so we decided that we wanted to do something different when it comes to the visual component of this, because usually going back to the old format of, you know, you release a single and then rock video, you know, band in Urban Decay setting playing, you know, angrily. It's like, okay. So we didn't want to do that, but we wanted to do something that was, that would help drive the songs that we're putting out and having something where it would be a bigger narrative as opposed to just like a rock and roll video. So cue to us calling our friend Michael Maxis, who is a director from Canada, from Edmonton, who has done probably three or four of our videos over the years. I haven't spoken to him in years. Ian and I talked to him about this idea of doing something a lot bigger and having like releasing five songs and having the lyrics of each of those songs complement this overall movie idea. So we more or less decided that we were going to do a short film, have five different parts to this film, and with the new songs that we'll be releasing, they will be accompaniments to the actual episodes.
Right.
Chapters, as we're calling them.
Feels very 2020 to me.
It feels 2020, and it's been not without its challenges.
Yeah.
But it's because the project is very ambitious. We've been very fortunate in weird ways that Michael Maxis knew he had just finished a feature film out in California, and he ended up meeting some stunt people and ended up meeting Cowboy, who's a UFC fighter who just fought Conor McGregor or whatever.
Right.
And he's transitioning into acting and wants to become an actor, so we asked him to be part of it.
Okay.
And then we had a change in the in kind of the treatment and the script that we were working on, and I wanted to have a female. I think I thought it lent its well to having the heroine, the hero, be female.
Right.
And so we ended up through the UFC connections and through Cowboy getting Rose Namajunas, who's a former champion in the UFC, and she was open to the idea of getting into some acting. And
so you've got two UFC stars.
A few more, And the funny thing is like none of us in the band are UFC
you are now.
Fans per se, but you know we respect the what goes into doing it. And so, and they've heard the songs and they were really keen on being part of it. And so it's been, it's been great. We have four of the five episodes kind of shot.
Where have you been shooting?
They have all been filmed in New Mexico.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's this...
Breaking Bad country.
It's this beautiful landscape, but it also looks like this dystopian Mars-like planet.
Sure,
you know?
Of course.
And so it's been really interesting to see how... Now, as we're releasing songs and we're putting this out and we're releasing these visual components to it, and they're a bit challenging, and they're you know, I highly suggest people checking them out because they're worth watching. But you know, we're throwing people off again because they don't really understand. Like, are we releasing a record? Are we releasing? Are these videos? Are they? Why are there only parts of the song and just the guitar? Like,
well, so, it sounds very much in tune with not only the tone of the record and the ambitiousness of the record, but also with what you're doing release wise and with what just the whole project seems like.
It.
You know, it's a pretty avant-garde move,
and it's alive, so it's happening in real time. Like, this is something that's like we're not just sitting here waiting on it to happen. This is like this is like the fourth song, we just got the mix yesterday.
You know what I mean? And you got in your hand.
And I got a baby in my hand. I'm trying to do all this stuff. It's been, but you know what? I will say that like approaching things in this way has been really reinvigorating to us, and the creative aspect and the having to make decisions kind of on the fly. And there is something very visceral. Like there feels, it doesn't feel like we've just been sitting on something and just kind of give it. This is a bold, ambitious adventure.
Well, it's either that or maybe never doing it again, right? Is that the thinking sometimes?
Well,
because sometimes
you don't want to become obsolete, and you don't want to paint yourself into a corner where you've, you know, you expect things to operate in a way that they used to, right? And it just, it doesn't work like that anymore,
right.
You know, and you need to work harder. You need to be more intelligent in the choices that you make.
And you need to nourish yourselves artistically, too.
That's
to actually get out of bed and say, I actually want to go do this.
And at the end of the day, it's not about anything else except for the fans getting music that they like. The beautiful part of working on this record, each song that we're working on and each song that we're putting out, they're all completely different than the last one. But there is a continuity to it that is, going back to our original conversation, that is uniquely just Billy Talent. So if you're a fan of ours, of the band, there's something on this record for everybody. Cause I think there's like Billy Talent is like a weird, multifaceted, multi-universe kind of band where we can have these proggy adventures, but we can also have slower, more mid-tempo-y, songs. And we
some
have
some of your biggest hits.
And we also have like some pretty hardcore down and dirty rock and roll songs, and punk rock songs as well, you know? So there's a little bit of everything on this for fans of the band, which is exciting.
How are you guys reflecting right now? Because we're in this moment and you guys have always been somewhat conscious of what's happening politically, and you always have to make these decisions of how much you're going to get involved, how much you're going to wear it on your sleeve, how much you have to say. Do you hold back? Do you get involved in politics? Do you not? There's all these decisions you have to make as a band and as a voice and as this force of art. And we're in this, you were pointing out, Rage Against the Machine, back at it. I mean, a lot of people are looking at that as some sort of a signifier of the moment we're in. So where do you put that responsibility? Or do you take it on?
I don't even think of it as a responsibility. I think it's just, I think music and you are a product of the environment that you're in. You know, and we've grown up in a scene which was really no scene other than trying your best. And if someone needs help, you help them. Like we've been part and doing show, like the very first show we ever put on in our high school cafeteria at Our Lady of Mount Carmel in Meadowvale, Ontario was, you know, you had to bring a canned good because we gave it to the food bank. And this is like in 92 or 93.
Who made that decision?
We all did.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and then that kind of spawned, like every year we would do this concert, every show we'd have to have some kind of charitable angle to it.
Philanthropy from day one.
Well, yeah, but so
not every band would do that, what I'm saying.
Yeah, sure. But that's just how we've always been. Yeah. So, and are we a political band? Sometimes, you know, are we socially aware of what's happening around us in our, you know, in our communities? Yeah. And around the world? Yes. And if there's injustice, if there's things that you see that, you know, right now it's the most dangerous, divisive time in my 44 years on the planet.
Pretty rotten.
It's, and truth is being spun into and being sold to you, which aren't truths, you know, and there's
it feels
this,
like an unstoppable wave.
It does. So, you know, to just pretend that that's not happening is not in the makeup or the DNA of this band. We will say Reckless Paradise, our new song right now, is exactly about what we're talking about. And it's about, you know, trying your best to be aware that there's more to the world than just you. And that we're part of this thing together, and we can get through this, and we can make better. We can make this place better if we start, you know, by working on ourselves and being a better person, and being more mindful, and being more helpful, and being more charitable, and being and just having a little bit more compassion and delicate towards other people. You know, like we're so easy nowadays to just cut people down.
How are you guys with that? Praised and also...
People, you know, there's always going to be contrarians, and there's always going to be people that don't like what you do. That's what art is. Right. That's what music is. Yeah. It's not for everybody, but for the people that it's for is why we do it.
But you do have access to it in this, and when you're in the public eye, and that's why we see people not wanting to take on hosting the Oscars and so on and so forth, because to have that kind of light on you is an invitation in the modern age.
And you're right. And that's true. And that is a responsibility that people in the public eye have to take. You also have to have a little bit thicker skin, you know, because there's going to be people like you work so hard on these songs and you work so hard on like the lyrics and the themes of them. And you develop this and just have people like, that sucks.
Right.
Or sounds like shit. Or I hate this band. Oh my God, look at what they're wearing. You know, but that's just like, and you kind of go, well, that's fine. You're entitled to your pen, but you're missing the whole point. Right. You know what I mean? So I think people just being mean for the sake of being mean is really sad, you know, but I still believe and try to surround myself with good people. I believe that you can put good intentions and, you know, and see them react with people. You know, there's no better feeling than seeing, you know, being in a place that maybe, you know, from like Cape Town, South Africa, or Moscow, you know, or Saskatoon. And when you look out in the crowd and you see people that are singing songs back to you and they have tears in their eyes or smiles or they're hugging their friends or they're just, they're just feeling that to me is everything that we've ever needed or wanted to do That's the goal. Everything else and all the bullshit of people wanting to, who particularly may not like us or they, you know, or whatever it may be, the haters, as they say, when you have those moments, no one or nothing that you can say can ever take that away from that bond between the song and a band and the fan. There's nothing. And that's why we do it. And that's why we continue to do it, is for that reason.
I think that's a good place to
leave
it.
You like that?
I do, man.
Oh, thank you.
It's fun to talk to you.
It's fun to talk to you.
And,
thank you.
And we're looking forward to all that happens, the multimedia exploration that we're going to be enjoying with Billy Talent. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. And good luck with your new endeavor, and all the best to you. Glad to see you back behind the mic.
There goes Ben, and Aaron was here as well from Billy Talent, shooting the interview for a film project they're working on. Billy Talent back at it again here in 2020. A couple new singles, which you can stream and download, and then the complete album will be out at some point. They're still deciding. And there's that film element to the music as well. BillyTalent.com for all the goings-on with the band, and they're headed out to Europe for huge festivals in May. And then back in Canada with festival dates later in the summer. Great to spend some time with Billy Talent. I also want to thank our sponsors today, Red Eye Media and Crows Theater, crowstheater.com, to find out everything that is happening there. Thank you for listening. We're back on Thursday with another edition of our remix series. This week, Heroin, the drag performer. Heroin will be my special guest. Lots to talk about, including her thoughts on RuPaul. You can always listen to episodes anywhere you enjoy downloading and streaming podcasts: iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, artattheendoftheworld.com, classicalfm.ca, and find us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We're back on Thursday. My name is Mark Wigmore. We'll speak to you then and for as long as we can.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.